This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. You know, the old saying goes, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. And that goes double for in-laws. Just ask any woman to share a story about her mother-in-law or daughter-in-law, but get ready to jump back because you've just opened the Pandora's box of the reluctantly related. According to our guest for this part of today's show, three of every four marriages are impacted to some degree by problematic relationships between daughters-in-law and mothers-in-law. Mothers-in-law can fear being shut out and at risk of losing their son or grandchildren. Meanwhile, daughters-in-law can often feel manipulated, judged, or simply not validated. These problems can lead to minor annoyances or stress, but can also result in total family breakdown or even divorce. In today's show, we're going to be talking about mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. So if you are one or have one, you're definitely going to want to listen to this. We're going to learn about why the in-law relationship is so hard, and we're going to learn some powerful tools and techniques that can bring peace and lasting change to that in-law relationship. And finally, we're going to learn also how you can change that relationship without having to actually confront your in-law. Because once you figure out how to handle these basic challenges and the kinds of personality types that influence the relationships, you'll be well on your way to creating a happier, healthy, and more peaceful life with the women in your extended by marriage family.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
Salagadoola, Mr. Kaboola, bibbidi bobbidi.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number, and get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream, a wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Deanna Brann, who is the author of Reluctantly Related, Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law. Deanna, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Is this something that has come out of unfortunate personal experience?
You know, actually, it has. Even though I'm a psychologist, I was having problems with my own daughter-in-law. And we initially got along great. And then once they started having children, that's when things started to fall apart. And I just couldn't figure it out for the longest time. And I finally got to the point where, you know, I need to figure this out. And so I researched it. Interviewed mothers-in-law, daughters-in-law, husbands and sons, and really worked at trying to figure this out, worked on my own relationship, and that's kind of how the book came about.
Well, when you say it, what do you mean it? The problems between mothers-in-law and daughters, I mean, because that's a pretty big it.
That is a big it, yeah. The different issues that come up between mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law and why this relationship is just so difficult. Or can be so difficult. It's not always, but a lot of the time it is. And, you know, it's not something that we talk about very much. And it's a very vulnerable relationship in many ways because, you know, these people need to get along. These two women really do need to get along. And when they don't, it can really create some problems, not only in the family itself, but in the marriage. And so it really is bigger than it seems.
Now, why do you think that it gets so much more play than father-in-law, son-in-law relationships, which you rarely hear about?
You rarely hear about that. And the way I look at it is, and from just, you know, understanding people and women and men are very different when it comes to relationships. You know, the way they form relationships, it's just not the same. Women take things so personally, and men don't seem to do that. You know, men have a different way of relating to each other, and oftentimes it's based around something, you know, an activity or, you know, common interest or something, whereas women, it's about the relationship. So I think that's why it really makes it very different for women and makes it harder for women, because we're so focused on the relationship.
Does it have to do a lot of the conflict and problems and squabbling to do with the son?
Oftentimes,
son of the husband, you know, particular person who is kind of in common to both of them.
You know, it can't. It's kind of interesting because he definitely is a focal point. And the way it seems to come out is they seem to be a bit competitive, not so much for his love, but for the influence they have over him. and so that's where it gets a little dicey.
Okay. Well, that's
you
terrible.
Laugh, so you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't exactly. That's the thing.
You don't?
You know, I think I have been, I'm not currently married, but I have been completely oblivious to these kinds of things. I think it's like, you know, I don't.
Well, that could be a good thing, maybe.
It's probably, I think, the safest thing in many ways.
Possibly.
Just it's going on, just you keep it down in there. And
let
me alone. Yeah. So what are some of the markers? You talk about different stages and different emotional places. How does a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship evolve? You said yours was wonderful in the beginning, and then it kind of happened with kids.
Yeah. Well, this can happen at any point. I mean, some people don't get along in the very beginning. You know, some people get along at first and then they don't. And, you know, some people get along at first, you know, they don't get along and then they do. And then, you know, vice versa, whatever. But it typically starts because if you really look at this relationship, it's a very artificial relationship. They didn't choose each other to become friends with or family with. They are thrown together because of this one man. And so they have to create something that they didn't choose. And, you know, the other piece, and probably one of the biggest pieces, is everybody comes into the relationship with their own history and their own emotional baggage. And, you know, so you've got two families that you're trying to blend, and everybody's got their way of doing things, their own traditions, their own way of thinking, their own perceptions of things. And you throw that all together, and because nobody talks about this relationship, everybody just tries to, you know, kind of force their way onto the other person. And it just doesn't work that way.
I guess I can see when you said that it could start early. I mean, I've heard stories from friends about the mother, who is the mother of one of them anyway, mm-hmm. who will kind of commandeer the whole wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a
yeah.
thing. I mean, that just she'll that's going to be the wedding that she wishes she would have had or something. And it goes really downhill pretty quickly from there.
Yeah, and it can be, you know, I mean, typically what happens with the mother-in-law, she still tries to be a mother to some degree, and not only to her son, but to her daughter-in-law. Well, her daughter-in-law doesn't want another mom. You know, she's got a mom. You know,
okay.
So, you know, to have someone tell you, you know, oh, you should do this or you should do that, you know, and the mother-in-law may be saying those things somewhat innocently. She's just, quote, giving her opinion. But to a daughter-in-law, she may be hearing that, you know, as criticism or judgment or whatever. And that's when, you know, things start to get explosive.
I'm just a whole new world out there. So what do you suggest? Is there something that you can do in the beginning of a relationship or that mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law can do early on to avoid some of the problems that happen? Or do you have to wait until something goes wrong and then deal with it?
No, I think what I truly believe would be the best thing for women to do is to really start, even if you're, you know, let's say you're engaged, even at that stage, before you're actually married, start creating and developing a relationship with this other woman, either side, you know, between the two of them. forget the husband for a minute or the son for a minute. Don't. It's not about him. It's about you two forming your own relationship and getting to know the other woman as a real person. Because once they start forming their own relationship, then they have more invested, and they have more invested in each other. And that's what's going to really allow them to create a better relationship all along the way.
So you sort of suggest a girls' afternoon out, I mean, to do a mani-pedi kind of thing? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think you want to get to know, you know, who this, what they like, what they don't like, you know, what their interests are, you know, all of the things that you would, if you were developing a friendship with someone, you know, else, how would you do that? What would it look like? What would you be looking for? And that kind of thing. It's basically the same thing. You're really trying to create a relationship based on who this person is, not the fact that she married my son, and that's the only common denominator we have, or that's my husband's mom. Because if that's all you have, then you have nothing invested in the relationship between the two women. And if you don't, then it can. That's when things start to break down.
Does it get worse if there is, if the, whoever it is, like, well, I guess the daughter-in-law, if her mother is not alive, or this, there was a divorce in the family, so the incoming mother-in-law really is kind of stepping into a void in a way. Does that aggravate things, or maybe make it better?
Interesting, very, very interesting question. Good question, too. You know, it actually depends on... it can create a good relationship. That can happen, or it cannot. And a lot depends on what the relationship with the mom was, with her daughter, the mother-daughter relationship, what it was before either she died, or, you know, what it was before the divorce or whatever. Because that relationship between the mother and daughter really has a huge impact on the mother-in-law relationship.
Now,
if the daughter-in-law hasn't, let's say the daughter-in-law hasn't resolved some of the, quote, mom issues that she may have had, then it's going to spill over into the mother-in-law relationship, typically.
No matter how good it was, or no matter how much preparation there was or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because what happens is she starts to, you know, kind of put that mother-in-law in a negative light, you know, as her mom, you know, and you know, because she hasn't resolved those issues with her own mother, that's going to spill over into how she views her mother-in-law and stuff like that. So, you know, there's just no way around that unless she starts working through some of those issues.
I'm speaking with Deanna Brand, who's the author of Reluctantly Related, Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Deanna about the whole mother-in-law, daughter-in-law thing.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up. I shouldn't be afraid to get on the school bus.
To turn on my computer.
Message. A lock to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Ever notice when you have a baby, everyone seems to give you advice? From your mother-in-law,
don't you know you can't take that baby out in the rain today? And where is her hat?
To your own parents,
you should take the baby outside every day, even in the rain.
To your friends,
you have got to get this diaper cream. It is so much better than the one you've been using.
When it comes to the important stuff, like immunizations and protecting my baby's health, I trust my baby's doctor. She really listens to my questions about shots, she gives me great information, and she works with me to make sure my baby gets protected. And that's something even my mother-in-law can agree with.
Honey, I totally support you getting the baby vaccinated, but really, shouldn't you put the baby's hat back on?
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
People have all kinds of excuses for not saving energy. I'll turn it off later, so we don't have those Energy Star appliances.
Well, maybe it's time to stop making excuses and save the energy and resources we can.
You just never know what people will need in the future.
We can all help save more energy for tomorrow. What's your excuse? For more energy-saving tips that also save money, visit loseyourexcuse.gov/parents. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brandt. And if you're just joining us, we're continuing our discussion with Deanna Brand, who's the author of Reluctantly Related, Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law. I want to talk a little bit about, you've got different sorts of characters in the book, and there's Comfortable Carla and kind of these archetypal mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law.
Right.
And let's talk about some of the common dynamics that happen.
Okay. Where would you like to start, with the mothers-in-law or
yeah,
the
daughter? Let's start with the mothers-in-law. I mean, okay. It sounds like, and I realize, of course, you know, this is making things that are very complicated into rather uncomplicated things, but that's
that's
what
okay.
You have to deal with. But it's good. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So let's start with Comfortable Carla and Uncertain Sarah. How about
okay. That? Comfortable Carla is probably the ideal mother-in-law. She has, you know, she's let go of her son emotionally. She knows what her place is in the new family. She sees herself as really secondary to her daughter-in-law as far as her son goes. And she knows her role. And so it really, she's very easy to be around. She's very, you know, she knows when to back off. She knows when to, you know, go forward with things. So it really, she really is the easy one. Uncertain Sarah is, she's interesting because she has let go of her son, but her issue is, I don't know how to be in relationship with my adult son at this point or my daughter-in-law. I don't know what they expect. I don't know what they want. And instead of talking about that, she just tries different things. And what ends up happening is she may try too hard, and so she comes on too strong, or she may be too aloof and too distant. She's kind of all over the map, and so it gives a lot of mixed messages to the daughter-in-law, and it can drive the daughter-in-law crazy.
Well, what do you suggest in these kinds of situations, not just with these two characters, but with the other ones? I mean, do you actually come right out and say, look, hey, let's go have lunch. We really have a lot of stuff to talk about. Or, I mean, it seems so artificial to do that.
Well, you know, you mean as far as if you want to resolve some of this stuff, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, you're saying, you know, she hasn't really talked about with the daughter-in-law, that we're talking about Uncertain Sarah, hasn't talked about with the daughter-in-law what the relationship is and what each expects from the other. And there's no way to discover that, I suppose, unless you actually have the conversation.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I really believe in is that, you know, you do not have to confront or challenge anybody in the relationship. Well, there are ways, let's say, for a daughter-in-law who's dealing with an uncertain Sarah to give her, help her figure out her place without making a big deal about it. And the way she would do that would be, she would say, you know, Sarah, we really, you know, need you to be doing this and this and this. And just, you know, make it light, make it, you know, kind. You know, her son could do the same thing. You know, they could do it together, whatever. But just, you know, help her see what she needs to be doing and how she needs to fit in.
You know, you mentioned the husband in here. What is or should be the husband's role, the husband-son character? Should he just stand clear of the whole thing, or should he try to? Because I'm... have been in the middle in a number of times, and it's just not where you want to be.
No, and you know, when a man is, and he gets caught in the middle a lot, and it's really, it's a no-win situation for him, truly.
No, it's not, yeah.
You know, and so my recommendation is, it's really, the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law really need to work this relationship out between the two of them. Now, there are times when, you know, the wife may want her husband involved, and that's fine, but he should not be speaking for his wife. She, you know, he can be standing beside her and support her that way if, you know, if they're agreeing on what she's saying, you know, where he supports her, but she really needs to work this relationship out herself, because otherwise, you know, it's going to create some marital problems, and you don't want that to happen. Because if he doesn't do it the exact way she wants him to do it, then that's going to cause another fight, and, you know, and again, he's not the one with the issue. She is.
Have you seen situations where this relationship, the mother-in-law-daughter relationship, has resulted in the end of the marriage?
I have seen that, which is really, really sad.
Because it's tragic, really.
Yeah, it is, because you know what ends up happening, Armin, is that, you know, they start fighting about the mother-in-law, but then it spills over into other areas. You know, and the wife stops respecting her husband because she doesn't feel like he's fighting for her or standing up for her. And so she starts to lose respect for him. And then he starts to really lose respect for her because, you know, he just sees her as, you know, I can't ever make her happy. She, you know, and it just spills over into all this other stuff. And that's when the breakdown happens. So it's not really because of the mother-in-law, but it but that's where it starts.
Wow. It just seems so incredibly complicated. So let's talk a little bit. We've talked about a few of the characters. We're kind of running out of time here, but I do want to get to some of the archetypal daughters-in-law. What are they like?
Well, let's talk about Doubting Donna. Doubting Donna is one who, it's interesting because on the surface, on the outside, she looks very together and very, you know, on top of things. But when it comes to her personal relationships, which would include her mother-in-law, she's really very... She second-guesses herself. She starts to doubt herself a lot. And so because of that, because of her own low self-esteem and her own uncertainty about who she is, she starts to, whenever her mother-in-law talks to her, she hears criticism or judgment. Whether it's there or not, that's how she hears it. And so then she reacts and responds in regards to that, which then creates kind of a snowball effect because then the mother-in-law reacts and responds. So she really can be quite challenging for the mother-in-law because you try to say something very innocently and then all of a sudden it's come back as you know, you've been critical or judgmental or whatever.
So what do you do?
I think the best thing for a mother-in-law to do in that situation, there's a couple things that they can do, but probably the main thing is, you know, don't assume that your words are coming across. You know, you have good intent, let's say, but your daughter-in-law is not going to hear it that way. So you need to make sure you really state your intentions. What is behind the behavior or the words that you're saying? You know, if you want to help her in the kitchen, you don't just get up and start helping her. You might with a friend, but you won't with someone like Donna because Donna's going to see that as, you don't think I can cook. You don't think I'm good enough. So you've got to state, you know, oh, I'd really, really like to spend some time with you, and we haven't talked in a long time. Would you mind if I helped you cook while we kind of catch up? That lets the daughter-in-law know why you're jumping in to help. And you're also making sure it's okay with her. And that's important because she needs to feel respected.
That just seems like another relationship where there's just no way to win. If you have somebody who's really oversensitive, no matter what you say, you know, you don't think I can do it? You don't think... I mean,
well,
that just seems like such a natural, for that type of mentality, a natural person or a natural way of reacting, which is... Ugh.
But if you couch it with, you really... all you can do is the best, you know, if you can deliver and you can say, this is why I'm wanting to do what I want to do, I mean, you know, you've spelled it out for her. If she still wants to see it as criticism, not a whole lot you can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
I would take it a step further. There's one thing you could do, and that would be you would kind of come back with, because it would show up in her behavior, and you'd just say, you know, you seem really uncomfortable. Did I say something that bothered you?
Yeah, that's
and
good.
Then you see what happens.
Yeah. Tell us a quick story. We only have about a minute left or so, but a quick story of a relationship that had problems and how it got resolved.
Okay. Well, let me share with you about a daughter-in-law that I was working with, and actually, it when you brought up the question about, you know, ending marriages and stuff, this almost happened with this relationship. Her mother-in-law was one who was really horrible about boundaries. I mean, she didn't care about boundaries at all. She did what she wanted to do. She didn't care what anybody said, and it really was creating a lot of problems in the marriage. She'd come over whenever she felt like it. She wouldn't knock. She'd just walk in. You know, she was always late to everything that they had invited her to, so it just she'd come in with all the drama. And the daughter-in-law kept talking to her husband about it, and either he didn't want to see it, he didn't want to get involved, you know, whatever his thing was, he just didn't want to deal with it. You know, it's his mom. You know, he's had to deal with that behavior. And his way of dealing with it was always just to avoid it. Well, daughter-in-law is coming from a very different place. They really can't avoid this, okay? It's starting to, you know, really interfere in their marriage. And they had a lot of problems with this. And they contacted me. And, you know, in talking to them, what I first helped them realize is that this has really become a marital issue. It's not a mother-in-law issue
right,
at this point.
Right.
So we first had to deal with the marital thing, and we dealt with that and really helped them both see, you know, that it's just a matter of setting some boundaries and setting consequences and following through.
Deanna Brandt is the author of Reluctantly Related, Secrets to Getting Along with Your Mother-in-Law or Daughter-in-Law. Thanks very much for joining us. Great to have you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association.
Welcome back
to
Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Despite the fact that our larger wars are pretty much winding down now, still get a lot of email from military families. Dear Mr. Dad, a few months ago, my husband got back from his third Army deployment, two in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. He's been diagnosed with PTSD and is getting treatment, but I'm worried that his condition is somehow rubbing off on the rest of the family. Our children are having problems at school, I'm finding myself on edge and agitated all the time, and my temper seems to be getting shorter by the minute. I used to think that if we survived three deployments, we could survive anything, but now I'm not so sure. What can I do? First, I want to thank you, your husband, and your kids for your service. What you're writing about is, sadly, getting more and more common. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, about 25% of vets returning from the recent conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq are suffering from PTSD. That's 500,000 veterans or more. If we include family members, that number more than doubles. When I was doing research for my recent book, The Military Father, A Hands-On Guide for Deployed Dads, I interviewed many military spouses who told me story after story about the toll that a veteran's PTSD takes on his or her family. I heard about families that couldn't drive to the grocery store because the vet would panic if he felt boxed in by other cars. It's a pretty dangerous situation in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I heard about little children who innocently came up behind daddy to give him a hug and were frightened by his sudden defensive action, the perfect response in combat, not so much for the living room. Not surprisingly, returning veterans, particularly those with PTSD, have a higher divorce rate than non-veterans, and in the past few years we've lost more American service members to suicide than to combat. But now, University of Utah researchers Timothy Smith and Catherine Kaska are confirming what your family and many others have known for quite a while. While PTSD initially affects veterans, it can also have a powerful impact on their spouse. Smith and Kaska worked with two groups of military couples. The veterans in one group had been diagnosed with PTSD. The ones in the other group had not. They measured each couple's emotional and physiological responses to discussions about potentially problematic relationship issues like children and finances. Overall, compared to the non-PTSD group, couples with PTSD experienced greater emotional and relationship stress, had higher levels of conflict, were more emotionally distant, and were more anxious, angry, and depressed. They also had greater increases in blood pressure, heart rate, and other indicators of cardiovascular health risk. Maybe the most interesting nugget of all was that the partners of veterans with PTSD showed even greater increases in blood pressure and heart rate than the veterans themselves. The good news is that there is help out there for you, your husband, and your children. Start with some couples counseling. Then talk to your base chaplain. Every branch of the service offers programs designed to assist vets and their families, regardless of their religious affiliation, if any. There are also a number of excellent online resources. I'd start with the VA's National Center for PTSD, which is www.ptsd.va.gov. Give an Hour is another great organization. That's giveanhour.org, and they have free mental health services to service members and families. And my favorite one of all, we've interviewed him a couple times on the show, the Military Family Network, which is emilitary.org.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.